And we welcome you. And we welcome you to the Tuesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I had to think for just a moment about what day of the week it is. It is Tuesday. The reason I hesitated is because we're going to be talking about what's happening at Carthage College tomorrow night, Wednesday night, an amazing concert that is planned to help celebrate the bands of Carthage and their 150th anniversary. I'm really happy to be sitting opposite Dr. James Ripley, who is the Director of Instrumental Activities at Carthage, Director of the Wind Orchestra and Concert Band at Carthage, and he will be on the podium for tonight's concert at 7:30 in Siebert Chapel, a concert which in large measure seeks to take us back to the very earliest days of band music at Carthage, including, incredibly, that very, very first band performance at Carthage 150 years ago. The concert tomorrow night, by the way, is also going to include not only Carthage's Wind Orchestra, but also the brilliant young musicians who comprise the Gaudete Brass Quintet, which has been a very closely connected group to Carthage and its music program for some time now. And they will be part of what promises to be an exceptionally fun and interesting concert. Again, tomorrow night, 7:30 p.m. in Siebert Chapel, part of Carthage's Performing Arts Series. And Dr. James Ripley, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Oh, thank you, Greg. It is wonderful to be back twice in one month. I feel honored to come back at the end of the month.
Imagine that. Well, we just had to talk about this particular concert and all that has gone into putting it together.
Right.
Maybe before we get to tomorrow night's concert, we could just talk a little more, I don't know, comprehensively, holistically, about this big 150th anniversary and how long this has been on your radar screen. I suspect, as somebody who's, you know, as far as I can tell, has always had a real interest in history and Carthage history, you've probably been thinking about this big anniversary year for quite some time.
In some ways, for about 20 years, I guess. it was about 20 years ago that we formulated an anniversary of sorts to recognize 130 years, but it had nothing like this kind of event that's happening on Wednesday or all of the other supporting activities of the year. It was just simply, we recognized at that point in a concert that it was 130 years. We did a little bit more at the 140th, including a commission of a work by Alex Shapiro called Liquid Compass, and that was kind of a signature moment for us as well. And then this has been in the planning for probably 2 years, just to make sure that everything would come into play with our trip to Japan, as well as the things with building in an alumni band. That doesn't happen overnight. So all the things over the year, and it was about 2 years ago, I guess, maybe even longer, that we asked Timothy Marr to write a work for us for the 150th anniversary, and that'll be happening on May 11th. I just got the score and parts Sunday, and it's a remarkable work. It's going to be so much fun to put that together. Boom. So it's been a lot of time in the making, yeah.
Wow. So in a nice protracted celebration, I mean, can't possibly celebrate a milestone this significant in one single concert. So I'm glad you're making a year of it. Now, just to take you back to truly ancient history, when I sang with the band on tour, wasn't that for the 125th anniversary, or am I messing things up?
It may be. I'd have to think through my let me do that. I'm not sure, Greg, but it was very early, so quite possibly that could have been, because I think we went on tour in maybe the second or third year that I was there.
Right, and yeah. we went down into Illinois to several different places, and it feels like that was for the 125th anniversary, although I could be wrong. But at any rate, I had such fun being with the band and just the way everything was so efficient and just ran smoothly. Everybody was happy. And I don't know, with all due respect to my fellow singers, choir tour always felt like it had a little bit of drama riddled into it. It was just easygoing band students just having a blast and having fun. And it was really, really cool to be part of that.
Well, thanks. That was a great trip. And we had a chance to get to the old campus. I recall we played some small little chamber pieces just outside, you know, on the old campus. It wasn't a formal concert at all there, but the concert at Washington Lutheran Church, and then I think we got down to St. Louis for a little bit as well.
So,
we had a lot of fun, and we need to get you back again, but I think we'll do Winnie the Pooh songs this time.
There you go. That sounds good. Well, let's back to the 150th, which, of course, is the big, big event, and as you said, a couple of years in the planning. So as you've thought about celebrating this really big, big milestone, what kinds of things were you thinking about, were you weighing in terms of what you wanted to be have incorporated into this, what I assume from the start was going to be a school year-long celebration?
Well, I think a lot of it encapsulates itself in the last concert, which is going to be, I hope, kind of a wrapping up of the looking back idea and primarily looking forward. So I had to think along those lines as far as what we were going to do to build up to that. And we certainly wanted to have an official anniversary concert, and simply having the historic instruments available to us from the 1st Brigade Band, that was significant. So honoring that history, honoring the students was also very much a part of what I was thinking of. So the commissioned work is actually about the students and what it is like to play in a band, what it's like to experience moments of real uncertainty or challenge, and to come through all of that. So the whole idea was fortitude, and that's part of the title. And then the other thing is, I really wanted to honor the heritage of the school as an ELCA institution. So there's a certain little ditty called "A Mighty Fortress" that also plays into the idea of fortitude. And so we have throughout the year played pieces that honor the Lutheran tradition as well. So it was to really take stock of where we've been, and then also to create some new things that help us look forward.
We're speaking with Dr. James Ripley, who is the Director of Instrumental Activities at Carthage College. He is conductor of both the Wind Orchestra and the Concert Band at Carthage, and he is on the podium for a concert tomorrow night, 7:30 p.m. in Siebert Chapel, which is probably the single most dramatic example of looking back to the dawn of band music at Carthage that I can possibly imagine. And maybe we should just spend a little bit of time here talking about exactly what's going to happen on tomorrow night's concert, and the way in which you managed to uncover a wealth of information about the very first band concerts at Carthage, and how tomorrow night's program will be a reflection of that.
Well, I'm happy to say that we are actually able to play all the pieces that was on that first program. We won't actually be playing one, but that was done back in October with the homecoming concert. The Carthage College Grand March is a very important piece in the band's history. As far as the players go, it's probably not worth repeating. So we just thought that doing it at homecoming would be good enough. So we have those pieces, and then we're also looking at some pieces that could have been played at the same time in the early band history, but we just don't have a record of that, so we're doing some pieces from that same era.
So favorites from that time.
Yes, and then one other thing we're trying to do is to play them in a way that would have been a familiar performance practice for the audience as well. So, for example, we start the program with a setting of America, My Country, 'Tis of Thee. Mm. But the way that that would have been performed in those early times after the Civil War was that the group would actually play the tune once through in a very romantic style with lots of attention paid to the text and how the music might move along with the words. And then after that, directly, the audience would be invited to sing along just in straight time to also then just join in the starting of the thing.
Huh.
Star-Spangled Banner was not the national anthem at that time. There wasn't a practice of starting a concert with that. But America would have been.
Hmm.
So we'll actually begin the concert with that piece and in that fashion. We move on to another piece by Stephen Foster called Santa Anna's Retreat from Buena Vista.
Hmm.
It's a rollicking little tune. It only takes about 2 minutes to play, but it just kind of gets the concert off to a great start. And then we move on to concert selections from that first program. We start with a full setting of the band playing, and then we move to just what would have been heard in those first concerts of six players on brass, conical instruments, cornets, and helicons.
Hmm.
And then and that's played by the brass quintet, plus a guest that's come to join them from the Great Lakes Naval Band.
Hmm.
And then after those selections, then the quintet plus one exits the stage, and then we have kind of a historical representation of now the idea that these six students that started the band at Carthage were joined by community members at times to form a more fully instrumentated group.
Hmm.
About 20 players, still not very big, but we then start with that idea by having the brass quintet play from the balcony, kind of resembling those first Carthage students.
Mm-hmm. Up on the roof.
Up on the roof,
yep.
And then we come back to the band that's playing on stage, and gradually within this one piece, this all happens within one piece, the brass quintet comes down to different locations and gradually joins with the band at the end.
Oh.
So it's a physical representation of the community and the students coming together. And then once they're there, then we have another piece to play that is the total collected musicians together. And then after that, our portion of the program is done. And then the brass quintet has their own portion within the performing arts series to play. So all of our selections are very short.
Wow. So you've just earlier made brief mention of something that obviously we really want to talk about at some length, and that is the fact that at least at certain points in this concert, there are some historic instruments that are going to be played that really take us back 150 years in a way that just isn't quite possible if all you're using is modern instruments. So first of all, tell us about these particular instruments, how they are different from their modern counterparts, and how you were able to procure them to be part of the proceedings tomorrow night.
Well, the thing that our listeners will want to remember about these instruments is that they were initially used by the military, by the Army, and within the Civil War, there are two types of brass instruments that were developed. The one was for the soldiers that would be marching in parade style, or you know, in single file as they were moving from place to place. The band was always at the front, but the instruments were constructed that the bells faced backwards towards the soldiers so that they could hear the music.
Hmm.
I've always wondered why they wanted to put the band up front for something like that, but that's exactly what they did.
Wow. Well, to lead the way.
I guess. But there was also mounted units. There was a cavalry. And so for the cavalry, you had to be able to carry the instruments on your shoulder. And so these are like circular instruments that go over the head, lay on your shoulder, and then wrap around the body. We would recognize that in our contemporary world like a sousaphone.
Mm.
But these are all different sizes of sousaphones. So, and they're lighter. So that means that the tubing is also a lot narrower. And so you don't get a really big sound from the instruments. Their tuning is a little suspect. They were functional instruments in different keys to be able to be heard.
Wow.
And so the sizes that we have are the largest as a bass instrument. And then there's two different types of tenor instruments. There's an alto instrument. And the soprano instruments would be recognizable to people as a cornet.
Okay.
But those are even in two different sizes.
Hmm. So how many of these do you have, and who's going to be playing them? I mean, is this what your quintet plus one is going to play?
Yes. These are all on loan to us from the 1st Brigade Band in Watertown, Wisconsin. Their heritage dates back to the Civil War with what was called the Broadhead Band. That was one of President Lincoln's favorite bands.
Hmm.
And it has been in existence in some fashion for many years, again, kind of reconstituted in recent history. But their instruments are all period instruments dating back to the Civil War. And in their museum in Watertown, they have instruments that date back to the Revolutionary War.
Wow.
Drums, fifes, and those coming to the concert will be able to see a number of those because they're bringing along a sampling of their other instruments that will be on display for people to view. So that, I think, is another fun thing about how the concert's played out is you'll really get a feel for the history of the time. But everything is pre-1900.
Wow. So what was it like, what is it like for these relatively young musicians of the Gaudete Brass Quintet to be finagling with these very, very old historic instruments? And do they have any history of doing that or experience of doing that before this?
Well, the trombone player, Paul von Hoff, actually has made quite a specialty of playing an instrument even older than what he's playing on this concert called the sackbut. This dates back to the 1500s. Kind of a slide trumpet, but of a trombone size. Anyway, that is the only person that really had any experience with historic instruments. And so it was wonderful. We had our rehearsal last night. And they came into play, and it was terrific. Everybody's really going to enjoy this concert. But we asked them, too, just to tell a little bit about their experience now with the instruments. And the same trombone teacher who had some experience said, oh, I love my instrument. You know, it's a real gem. And the tuba player said, not so much. I'll be willing to put this one aside once the concert's done. But what was so generous on the part of the 1st Brigade Band was they had the quintet come actually to Watertown, I think it was the end of November, and they gave them a chance to just try out all the instruments that they wanted to so that they could find the one that would serve them the best for playing at the concert. So one of the instruments that they decided not to play was one that is actually thought to be in the first picture of the Carthage Band, the actual instrument that was used at Carthage when the band started, they believe is in their collection.
Wow.
So
not just an instrument like it, but the actual instrument that one of those young men played 150 years ago.
That's right. There's a a very unique bracing that's between the tubing that they really did not see at any of their other instruments that they've seen of that type. And so they believe that that's the same instrument.
Wow.
Yeah.
So will that be at Carthage?
It will be.
So people can take a look at this moment or relic from our school's history.
Yes.
Wow. Very cool. This might be just as good a time as any for us to just pause for a second and hear from the Gaudete Brass Quintet and a CD that I happen to have here at the station that I just love called Brass Outings. And of everything that's on this, and it's an interesting array of pieces, you're suggesting that I should play the Scherzo by John Cheatham. Just say a word about this piece.
Well, Cheatham was from St. Louis and taught, I believe it was at Washington University, and created this piece, which is in a very fun fashion, in some unusual meters and rhythms as it goes. And just like when you think it's going to get started, it kind of stops and it keeps rolling around in a very unique way. So, I think it's a wonderful piece.
Sounds fun. John Cheatham, Scherzo, and here it is, played by the Gaudete Brass Quintet. Is fun. The Scherzo of John Cheatham, played by the Gaudete Brass Quintet. They are sharing the program on tomorrow night's concert at Carthage College in Siebert Chapel, which is part of the Performing Arts Series, sharing the program with the Wind Orchestra in this concert earmarked to celebrate the 150th anniversary of band music at Carthage, if you will. And they will, for part of the program, be playing the aforementioned historic instruments. I assume that by the time they get to their full part of the program, they'll be blowing into their familiar, friendly, modern instruments, right?
Absolutely. They will be most happy to be back on their home instruments.
Right. Very good. And it sounds like for that part of the program, then, we're not talking about vintage music from the 19th century. They're going to be, it's from the sounds of it, playing a wide array of things to just show off their brilliant talents.
Yeah, certainly. What I would recommend to everyone is that this is really the Midwest's most, and maybe the country's most innovative brass quintet. Hmm. Their specialty has been in looking to composers to write music for them, but that's something that's done in a lot of other places. But the people that they've been able to engage to do this, like Joan Tower and John Corigliano, I mean, some big names that have written for them particularly, and some wonderful music. And one of the most recent ones, and this will be the finale of the concert, is by an Ephraim Champion, who's a Chicago-based composer. And what they've done is to ask various Chicago composers to write about their neighborhoods. We know about that big part of Chicago is their feeling about their different neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And so this is South Shore, Chicago. It was written in 2021 and is the newest work on the program, so something quite new. They are actually playing the Joan Tower piece that opens up the their part of the program. It's a piece called Copper Wave.
Hmm.
And then it does also go a lot farther back. There's a transcription of a work by the English composer William Byrd.
Oh.
And so they will be doing one of his vocal works transcribed for this brass quintet.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. They play so well. Can you explain their connection, their relationship with Carthage?
Well, it goes back a long way, but I'm really pleased to say that the reason we invited them to play this time extended beyond their Carthage connection. This really was a major group that we felt belonged on the series just as much as any of the other groups that come that play on the series.
That come a long way from far away.
Right, exactly. But what was helpful was that knowing that we might be able to encourage them to play these historic instruments made it a little bit easier to make that connection. I don't know that any other instrumental quintet would take that on, but certainly these folks did. But it extends back to, maybe 2005, 2006. Two of their founding members, Scott Teggy and Paul von Hoff, both began teaching at Carthage about the same time that they started the group. And so for a short time, they were ensemble in residence at Carthage. We also had those two teaching for a number of years. Paul still teaches for us. And I think the other thing that is fun for the audience to know about Scott Teggy's history is it extends actually to his father, who was in the first graduating class at Carthage.
Ah.
So here at not way back.
Right.
He's not that old.
Right.
But when the campus was located at Kenosha for the first time, he was a freshman. And then through the 4 years of his time here, he was in that first graduating class. And then Scott, his son, came to be our tuba teacher.
Wow. Fun. Lots of connections. So the Gaudete Brass Quintet are featured artists on tomorrow night's concert, which otherwise also features the Carthage Wind Orchestra celebrating the 150th anniversary of band music at Carthage. I'm speaking today with Dr. James Ripley from the music faculty, the director of instrumental activities at Carthage, and the conductor of the Wind Orchestra. And you have been doing, I know, a lot of research even before this anniversary year on sort of where all of this began. Although I think from time to time we've at least briefly touched on it, I think this is a great opportunity to allow you to take us all back 150 years to when, as far as we can tell, the very first band concert of any kind was played on the campus of Carthage College. So maybe as you're taking us back, also remind us again of where Carthage was at that point in time in a sense, what kind of a school it was at that time.
The school began in Hillsboro, Illinois, and then moved to Springfield. Both of those tenures were fairly short-lived, and then they came to Carthage, Illinois, as I wouldn't say it's a training school, because that's more what I think about as a seminary, but as a school for people to study, in particular to be a minister in the Lutheran tradition. And that became the focus of the college in those early years. This was shortly after the Civil War as well, and so there were students who had played in Civil War bands that came to the college, and they wanted to continue playing. And the German professor at the time, a certain Dr. Helfrich, he undertook the organization of that first band of six players. And we know that the first concert was actually given from the rooftop of the college building. What is a little bit, I'm always thinking about exactly what happened. And there seems to be a question about whether or not that was the dormitory, which was recently built, or the main building was actually constructed, but it was only halfway done. So it just mentions the college building. So one of those two buildings on campus was where it was. I'm assuming now that they would have called the college building the actual main building. But that was back in late November of 1873. It was reported in the newspaper, the Carthage Republican, on November 26th. So they mentioned that it happened a few evenings ago. So sometime shortly before November 26th, then the group took off and started playing these oyster suppers around town, ways to create some funds so that they could possibly get some better instruments. And as that year progressed, they also were able to play at the commencement ceremony and baccalaureate, and seemingly was doing very well, but they seemed to be a little noisy for some of the faculty, the drums and the cymbals. And, you know, did that really belong within these more somber and kind of ceremonial events? You know, and
the dignity of the occasion.
Exactly, exactly. But then after a couple of years, this loud music, as it was called, was put on hiatus for a while, that the faculty won out, and they said that, you know, this was going to maybe be a little too expensive, which was reacted by the band director by saying that, no, rest assured that we're here to stay, and that, you know, these new instruments that you might want to purchase, they will be used for years and years to come. That did not play out as far as the actual events, and so it took some time before the group was reorganized. We know that there was, for a number of years, a mixed string with wind group, and often percussion, maybe a piano, pretty much the collection of instruments that were available that carried on an instrumental tradition at Carthage. And then we know that after the First World War, and specifically after the pandemic of 1918, then the school again re-established itself. There was a very prominent kind of feeling about reinstituting some of the things that had gone away earlier on. And so there was this kind of rebirth of the college in around 1920, 1921. And that's when the band then pretty much continued on for all of those years since.
Okay, interesting. Well, in the 1920s are really when the Carthage Choir was formed in serious fashion and went on its first tour. And, of course, that group will celebrate its centennial really soon. I forget if that's the next school year or the year after. It kind of depends on how you count those things. But so that the Roaring Twenties were really roaring in Carthage, yes. Illinois, apparently.
Yes. The idea that the community members were also very supportive of the institution at that time is pretty evident.
Mm. Have you had a chance to trace all of the conductors of the Carthage bands from, say, the 1920s, or is that a little bit of a checkered history? And, I mean, has there always been somebody on the faculty who was part of that, or has this sometimes been more of a student-generated, student-directed thing?
I was able to find out that there was really only, I think, 1 year when you might consider there have been a student that was leading it, but it was actually a graduate student from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Hmm. So you might even think of it more as like an interim replacement for a year. Otherwise, they were all members of the faculty, and there were certainly quite a number, as opposed to the choir tradition, where there was a gentleman, Elmer Henke, that was noted for his contributions for many years. But he also was the leader of the band for a number of years.
Wow, yes. I did not know that.
Yes, he had the group for a number of years. There was a Professor Nehez, a Franklin, a lot of different names over time. But certainly once the college moved here, the tenure of Dr. Woody Hodges and then Ken Winkle, you know, really established a long tradition here in Kenosha.
And, of course, you were so kind to include them in the proceedings back at homecoming when you kicked off this anniversary celebration in such fine fashion. I think that was at homecoming, right?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Yeah.
And both of them invited to conduct a piece on that really eventful program. So at what point in the group's history did the band start touring?
I think that's best understood that the instrumental groups had their touring through the brass choir.
Mm.
That was something that was started with Professor William Roth. Mm. And as the organist, he worked with a band director, an Arthur Shainoff. So Arthur Shainoff was the band and the brass teacher at the time, and he worked with Bill to make these trips available to the students, always in the Midwest, but largely on weekends to play with organ and brass. That was the way that the group traveled. I believe it was Dr. Hodges that took the group to Minneapolis on tour once. But it had not been a long-standing tradition for the band because that was what the brass choir did. And,
right.
And Ken Winkle also would have that kind of opportunity with Bill Roth as well to take the brass choir on tour.
Right. So when you came to Carthage, that was in 2001, right?
Correct, yes.
So were you, in a sense, starting something by taking the full band on a regular basis on tours?
Yes, that was my intent, to help especially recruit new students to come to campus, to be able to play in schools and in churches where we knew that our students would come from regularly. And some of that was just also give back to the Lutheran churches who were supporting financially the different Lutheran colleges. And so it made sense to me to be able to go back and play at the churches as well.
Right.
So that was kind of the formation of it. And then it was in 2004 that we were able to take our first tour to Japan as well. And so we've been on the road pretty much every year since then, except for COVID. And it's just a wonderful way to experience a different level of music making and a different level of camaraderie with the students.
Right. I've been on enough choir tours to know that one of the aspects of the adventure is stepping into a different church sanctuary or into a different auditorium and, in a sense, making sense of it, getting at home, getting familiar so you can perform, and every room, of course, a little bit different. And I suspect for a wind orchestra, it's the same kind of experience.
It is very much so. Contrasting examples for you here. Probably the biggest challenge that we ever had to play was in St. Louis. There is a St. Xavier Church. It's a beautiful Gothic church, but oh my goodness, I think some of the sounds that we played are still resonating. we had a big challenge to be able to shorten the notes in a way that would be discernible, because that was so resonant.
Otherwise, it's just all mush.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Mm. And then in contrast, we've been able to play in what I understand is the second best hall in all of Japan. There is in Tokyo a place called the Suntory Hall. And so we were able to play in there. And every little thing that you wanted to do as a musician was perfectly captured and then given back to the students, which was lovely. And we also had a very positive experience this last time that we were in Japan, and we played at the hall there. And the group just elevates themselves when you're able to play in a space that is so wonderfully acoustically set.
Wow. I want to take a moment to talk about Siebert Chapel, which is, of course, where tomorrow night's concert is. And I have long said, and it's just my amateur opinion, experienced amateur opinion, that I think nothing sounds better in Siebert than a band. And I think that every December when the Kenosha Pops plays their Christmas concert in there, I think that every time there's a wind orchestra concert or a such-and-such brass quintet or whatever, it just feels like this amazing space for brass. Is that just my imagination, or is it a really cool space for a group like the Carthage Wind Orchestra to perform?
I think there's probably three things in response to that the audience should know, and that it certainly sounds wonderful. There's no doubt about it. Even when we were in rehearsal yesterday, again, for a while after being in the rehearsal hall, the sound is really very warm and enveloping, and it is truly wonderful. The things that make it a challenge is that from the front to the back of the stage area, there is a difficulty in hearing things, because a lot of times you'll be listening to the sound of the room rather than to the sound of the players that are actually right beside you. And so you start to play with a little delay. And so I basically tell the players the first rehearsal in here, it's not wasted. I mean, it's actually very valuable, but just know that it's not going to sound as good as it did the last time you played in the rehearsal hall. It's going to take us a while to kind of find each other again, the same way that you experience with different concert halls. So we have to work with that. And then the other thing that is a challenge in that space, because it is so resonant, is actually to play quietly and to have the audience actually perceive that it's still musical. That seems to be a strange thing to say. But we could actually play a lot quieter, but it would sound very distant to the audience, maybe tentative even. And the heating and air circulation starts to take over at a certain point, that you hear that more than you would hear what you truly want to play as quiet.
Good point.
So if bands don't play quietly, then it makes sense that the play sounds good.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, I always love just sitting in the audience and you know, let that big, rich brass and woodwind sound and percussion just kind of wash over me.
Yep.
And it's always a pleasure. And certainly tomorrow night's concert is going to be something extra special with this look back at 150 years of history. So remind our listeners once again of exactly when this concert is happening and what people need to do if they would like to be in the audience for this once-in-a-lifetime experience or occasion.
Yes, it really will be truly unique. And 7:30 p.m., and it is at the A.F. Siebert Chapel again, and we will certainly be able to take tickets at the door, but this is Performing Arts Series, so there is an admission charge. You can also access tickets directly online by going to the Carthage website and going to the box office. If you just simply type in the search for Carthage as box office, that will get you to the place where you can find the event. You can also look for the event online, and there's directions there as far as how to get tickets online.
Very good. So the Wind Orchestra and the Gaudete Brass Quintet as part of this concert tomorrow night, 7:30 in Siebert Chapel, and the mastermind behind it all and on the podium, Dr. James Ripley, historian in residence for the music department and the director of instrumental activities. I really appreciate you coming in today. I know it's a really, really busy week, and glad that we could have this conversation about bands at Carthage and tomorrow night's really exciting concert. Thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure, Greg. Thank you for being such a supporter of all of the things in the Kenosha and Racine community.
You bet. Here is the Gaudete Brass Quintet and some music of Monteverdi to take us up to the top of the hour here on WGTD.